under the sea, in an octopus's garden, in the shade.
It is the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Happy to be joined this week by Michelle Reeser-West. She is with Pointer Landscaping. She has been on the program before, and we welcome her back. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning. Thanks for having me again. I feel like I'm finally starting to get the hang of it.
You're getting the hang?
Yeah.
That's good. What's going on at Pointer right now?
Oh, man, we have been kind of in this holding pattern. We've talked about it in the last few times I've been here and just prepping and getting ready to go. But as of Monday, I will have some crew back in, and we are ready to get things started. We're ready to get back in people's gardens and starting to slowly do some things. So it feels good to finally have some stuff on our list, and we're looking forward to getting back out there in the garden.
We are officially proclaiming this episode of the Garden Hotline the first one of the season.
Yeah, okay. It's exciting. First one. So even though the groundhog last weekend said we have five more weeks of winter, we're going to say that we're officially starting the gardening season on this show right now.
It's okay. Official. It is official. Just wanted to make sure that declaration is known. It's episode one of the Garden Hotline of the spring season.
That's right.
And what?
Go ahead.
No.
Yeah. No. I think it's official. It's definitely time to start getting out there. We're gonna, this week. There's not a ton to do, but it's a really important time of year to start thinking about pruning. I think we've been kind of saying hold off on pruning, and now it's definitely time to start getting out there. Next week our crews are going to start focusing a lot on roses, cutting back ornamental grasses. We'll start pruning hydrangeas, things like that. So it's definitely, it's too early to be doing a lot of things. Like, we'll leave our perennials alone. We're going to probably leave a lot of that leaf litter alone for right now. But it's definitely time to get out there and start pruning our woody shrubs that are late blooming shrubs. We want to make sure that we are not pruning anything that's going to bloom soon, because if we're pruning those types of things, we're going to cut off those nice flower buds that we'll look forward to this spring. So if we prune those now, we won't get that bloom. So we're just going to make sure anything that you prune is going to be the later blooming stuff, the shrubs and the trees that grow their flower buds on new stems and not those old stems from last year. So we got to protect our flowers for the spring.
I should mention the phone number, because you probably have a question for Michelle about this season coming up. 314-436-7900 is the Garden Hotline. If you happen to be out of the area and want to use the 800 number, you just have to dial 1-800-925-1120. Again, the local number is 314-436-7900. Let us know what you're thinking for the spring, what you might be challenged by, any questions you might have. Michelle will do her best to answer them. With the ground right now being possibly, we've got some snow coming and some sleet maybe, and we've got a little rain today. It's kind of fluctuating. The temperatures are all over the place right now. They've 37. We had 75 the other day. We've had 60s, 30s, 20s, 40s. So how does that affect people's plans or landscaping?
So as far as the temperature goes, our plants can typically take the fluctuation in temperatures, especially when they are short-lived. We don't have extended periods of warm in this late winter time. That can affect the plants. A lot of times that heat or those warmer temperatures will signal to the plant to start growth. And then if we have a cold snap after that, which we will because we're in St. Louis and we're still in February, that could damage the plant. Those plants, when it warms up and they get active, all of those sugars and the water within their system gets active, and then it freezes, and then that water and all of that sugar will also freeze, which can damage the tissue of your plant. So longer, prolonged periods of warmth can be a problem. The thing that we're really thinking about right now is the ground. We spent a lot of last fall talking about the drought and how much we needed the rain. And so far this winter, we have had a lot of natural precipitation. You know, we had all of that snow. Some places around here got, you know, upwards of 12 inches. Some places got 8 or 10, but that's a lot of water that has melted off over the last couple of weeks. I think I'm actually still seeing a few piles around town. That 70 degrees the other day did a great job, but there's still some piles around. And again, there's snow in the forecast for the coming week. So the ground is really saturated. We're getting rain right now. We've had some rain earlier in the week. So that's the thing that we're really thinking about. We think about that because of, you know, soil compaction and planting trees in really squishy ground isn't that great. So if you are out in your beds in the coming days with this, all of this squishy, muddy soil, then just be careful where you're walking. If it's really squishy or really muddy, I would avoid walking in your garden beds. So that's the only thing that I would think about now is just, you know, the damage that can be done from walking around in those muddy areas.
When does planting begin?
It could happen now. Temperature-wise, it's can happen now. It's actually still a really good time. Anytime the ground is not frozen is typically a good time for planting. I wouldn't do a lot of transplanting now because it's just not a great time for that. But we would do a lot of planting in this temperature. And in fact, we have some stuff on the schedule for next week for planting, but we may have to hold off just because it's just a little too wet to be digging in the muddy conditions.
That is Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. She's here to answer your questions. This is an at-your-service program that's been on the air for more than 30 years, and we're happy to have you listening. And you can reach us at 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. It's the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. I'm Scott Jagow, joined this week by Michelle Reeser-West of Pointer Landscaping. And she is answering your questions at 314-436-7900. Yes, that does include talking. So let's get to the phones. Barb, you're up first.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I have three types of hydrangeas, Limelight, Annabelle, and the oak leaf kind. I know I can cut back the Limelight at this time. I want to know how far back can I cut them? They have gotten so huge. I'd like to at least do a half. And is it also the time of year when I can cut back the oak leaf?
Yeah, so this is a great question. So in St. Louis, we do have several types of hydrangeas that do well for us. And you've mentioned three. So that Limelight is a paniculata type of hydrangea, and that blooms on the new wood. So it's safe for us to cut that back. Anytime I think about pruning, I think about when does this shrub bloom? And then it kind of tells me if it's okay. So we know that these hydrangeas or the Limelight type are summer bloomers, so we can go ahead and prune those back. These are a type that you can really cut back hard. I'm not sure what your starting size is, but cutting back in half is completely reasonable.
Okay.
You could even probably get away with more than half if you needed to, if they haven't been pruned.
Oh, good.
They hadn't been pruned every year. You know, we typically have the rule of thirds with pruning, but one of the things that we can get away with is this rejuvenation pruning on some of these plants when they're dormant. And definitely that Limelight is one that we can get away with. So I would say prune away on those. When you're pruning those, I would find your buds, find a node where the buds are coming and cut as close to that as possible without damaging. So the paniculata have opposite buds or whorled buds sometimes. So that means the buds are going to be straight across from each other, which sometimes makes it a little bit difficult to get super close to that node. So you'll probably want to stay, I would say, a quarter of an inch away from that and try to have a good angle on your cut.
Okay.
You know, around 45 degrees. And so that would be, you know, my recommendation for the paniculata or the limelight kind. I think you also said Annabelle. Is that correct?
I have a few Annabelle, yes.
Okay, so that's another one. It's hydrangea arborescens family. So that's another one that is, it's a great time right now to start cutting those back. You can choose the size that you want to cut those back. Sometimes on older ones that are really large and overgrown, we will cut those all the way back to the ground. Or you can pick a height like 12 or 18 inches and again look for that node and cut it back and try to cut them back all uniformly to that node or to those buds.
Okay.
On the Annabelle, it's also a really great time. They have a tendency for a lot of those inner branches to die all the way back to the ground. And right now when things are dormant and when you're pruning those back, if you don't prune them all the way back to the ground, I would take a few minutes while you're pruning. If you prune back to 18 or 12 inches, take a minute to kind of investigate some of those inner branches. You can take your pruner and give it a scratch or your fingernail. And if it scratches and there's green that's revealed underneath that bark, you can leave it because it's still alive. But if you scratch it and there's no green and it's brown, I would take your pruners and remove that all the way back to the ground. So this will help with circulation, which will help with pest and disease. It will open up the plant. It will just generally make it healthier overall. So that is what I would do. And if you haven't pruned them back in several years, I would probably think about just giving them a haircut all the way back to the ground. And I would do that every 3 years regardless, but once a year at least, it's a great time to, you know, at least go back to 18 inches, 12 inches, something like that. Okay, so those are two. Go ahead. Did you have another question?
And then the oak leaf, is it time that I can do that too, or just remove all those old dead branches?
Yep. So then the oak leaf hydrangea, is hydrangea quercifolia, is in a category that's a little bit different. Oak leaf can bloom on new and old wood. So oak leaf is one that it doesn't really matter what time of year that you're pruning it. So right now, again, would be a great time. We tend to not overly prune oak leaf hydrangeas. We like to prune those mostly for shape or a little bit of size reduction, depending on where you have them. But it's definitely an okay time to be pruning those. And the one that we haven't mentioned that's a common one here in St. Louis is the hydrangea macrophylla, or some people call them mop heads. They're the ones that are oftentimes pink or blue, that are oftentimes in part shade. They're also ones you can identify because all of the stems come straight up from the ground. And there's not really a lot of branching. They start at the crown of the plant and they all kind of fan out. So that's one way of identifying them. But that type of hydrangea, we do not want to touch at this time of year. Those set their buds for this season last fall. So if we do any pruning on those right now, then we're going to lose the flower bud. This is also a type that's kind of finicky for us in St. Louis. It gets a lot of winter damage from time to time. So these are ones for the last several seasons that we haven't seen a lot of blooms from these, because the last couple of winters we've had some stretches that were, you know, we had some extreme wind chill and things were, you know, below zero for an extended period of time. And when that happens, we can lose all those flower buds from the previous season and not get a good show. And it can take some time for them to reset those buds, and we sometimes get a little bit of a show later in the season. So macrophylla, some people call them big leaf hydrangeas. Those do not get pruned right now, but the other three can.
And I have one more question I just thought of.
Okay.
I have several Itea bushes out there mixed amongst the limelight hydrangeas, and they have just gotten so overgrown as well. And they keep sprouting up new growth, like further along the path. And how much can I, and is now a good time to cut those back, and how much can I cut those back?
So Itea is an earlier blooming shrub, so I would hold off on pruning any Itea. If you want to prune the suckers right now, that's a great time to get in there, and we call it root pruning, where you're getting rid of some of those suckers, and again, thinning out the plant is always good for its overall health. So right now is a great time for that. I wouldn't do much reduction in height or anything right now until it blooms.
Okay.
But as soon as it blooms, you can get out there and do a reduction. And again, this one would be one that I would follow that rule of thirds and not take more than a third off the top.
Great. Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, good luck.
Okay. Thanks, Barb. Great questions from Barb there.
I know. I really like talking about pruning.
It's I can tell.
It's one of my favorite things. I always joke with people, if I could get paid well and just go around town doing hand pruning with a little helper to clean up after me, because I don't like that part, I could be a happy girl just doing some hand pruning. So it's my favorite time of year in gardening is all this dormant pruning.
What if you had a big helper?
It would be great, too. Big, little. Size doesn't matter, they say.
I looked up Hytea. And it has nothing to do with Swedish furniture. So just
It's Hytea with a T, Scott.
Yes, I got that. The number is 314-436-7900. Shirley, you have a question about this season that began today on this show. We have officially launched the spring season, the planting and the growing season. And Michelle Reeser-West is here from Pointer Landscaping to answer your questions. Valentine's Day is coming up, and I get a little bored with roses.
I mean, thumbs down for all you guys listening.
Okay.
No, I don't want to be a hater.
Do you have an alternate that you like?
I mean, I love tulips. Tulips is a great one for me. Gladiolas are really fun when you get those. They're really big and showy. They last a long time. Roses are fine. I mean, it's the symbol of love, right? The red roses. I actually would, if it were me, if somebody were sending me some kind of flower plant for Valentine's Day, I would actually just prefer a live potted plant. You can send those too. Those last forever. And that would for sure let me know that the person loved me. I don't need the red the red roses. But they're great. It's a symbol of Valentine's Day, so I don't want to hate on them too much.
No, it actually dates back to Greek mythology, and then the Victorian era, it became kind of a tradition to do it on Valentine's Day. But yeah, I was curious what you might enjoy. I think a live potted plant sounds fun.
Yeah, it lasts forever. You'll know all year round. Well, unless you kill it, you'll know for a much longer period of time that person loves you and it was thinking about you. So.
Unless you kill it.
Yeah.
The number to call to answer or to ask your question is 314-436-7900. Let's go to Matt. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. So I had this really, really nice burning bush hedge. My parents used to call them, you want them as the latest compactus, I think?
Correct.
Okay, so this thing has gotten to the point where I have to use a ladder to trim the top of it, and the thing is 60 feet long. And I'm wondering, how far can I cut it back so I don't have to use a ladder anymore?
Yeah, another great question. Burning bush are pretty resilient, and we have to do this a lot. I mean, they are some that get really big, and if you, over time, they just get bigger and bigger and harder to maintain. And trust me, I feel your pain having to get on a ladder up and down and then move the ladder for 60 feet and they're above your head and your arms are like jelly. So I don't blame you for wanting to, reduce the size of those. But you could probably, without seeing them, I don't want to tell you to go too boldly, but a lot of times you could go pretty hard, and they may look funny, right? Like if you cut back some shrubs that are 8 to 10 feet tall and haven't been pruned for a while, they could be leggy, they could have some really big stems. So when you cut them back, they're going to look bare, they're going to look silly. It may take, 2 or 3 seasons for them to really flush back out again. So if you're willing to kind of have a couple of awkward seasons, go back to like the teenage years of looking a little funky, then I would recommend, halfway. If you don't want that look, a third would be fine. But they're definitely hardy. They definitely can take some hard pruning. So I would totally recommend if you want that hard cut back to go for it.
Right, because it's like a skeleton on the inside.
Yep.
So I can cut it back just to a point where I can reach the top of it, because the thing is 5 foot wide as well.
Yeah, so definitely cutting it back to where it's manageable for you. And when you do that, that's going to tell, anytime you prune a plant, you're basically telling it to make more, right? So it's going to heal those cuts. It's going to push out new growth. And that's what you want, right? I'm sure that it's really old and it's probably very leggy. It's probably very thin. So by cutting it back that hard, you're actually going to improve the overall health of that tree or shrub by letting that light penetrate a little bit more and by letting, you know, some air circulate a little bit more. So I would just say happy pruning.
Very good. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Matt. Good question there. 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline. That's how you reach Michelle Reeser-West with your questions, and we will continue with them in just a moment on KMOX. It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX, and right now, nobody's stopping the rain, but it looks like by afternoon, we will have it out of the way. Mostly cloudy skies and a high of 44, but Monday, Tuesday, snow possible, even sleet on Wednesday, so be prepared for that. It doesn't sound like it's going to be a huge storm like the one we had a few weeks ago, thankfully, but we are in early February, so that's not surprising. Our guest today is Michelle Reeser-West. She's from Pointer Landscaping. She's been here before. Very popular with you, the listener, with questions at 314-436-7900. Let's get back to the phones. Kim, you're up next. Good morning.
Good morning. Michelle, my question is about peonies, irises, and I think that, yeah, those are the only two. I'm moving. And I'm going to be moving to an area. It's a brand new yard. There's two white oaks in the yard, and that's it. Am I better off to bring some of my peonies and irises with me or purchase new ones? Or what are the pros and cons on that?
I would take them all with you. I am like a sentimental gardener. I have plants from my mom's house. I have plants from the house my dad grew up in. So I like the idea of you taking some of those plants with you. Certainly you can buy some new ones when you get there. But these are both types, both peony and iris are great options for transplanting. Even if you have to hold them for a little bit, both of them have like a little bit of a underground tuber that can withstand some time outside of the ground. Especially if you're doing it now, right now could be a great time to go pop those out of the garden and store them until you're ready to use them. When you are ready to do that, there's probably a couple of different things you might do depending on how much time you have in between removal and planting. But like I said, both of these have like an underground tuber that you can dig out of the ground and kind of clean off some of that dirt that comes off with it. You could even hose off all of it if you don't want any of it on there. And then you can store it in like a paper bag. You could put some peat moss or something in there to help keep the moisture out, but you don't necessarily have to. And then you could just store that in a cool place inside like a paper bag. And when you're ready to plant in March or April, you can take those out and pop them back into the garden. And they may not bloom for you in that first season, but they certainly should root in and put out some foliage and do pretty well. Those are great options for transplanting and taking with you. So my vote's yes.
Okay, I'll take them with me. I can't take them all because my daughter's going to be living where I'm at now, but I'll take most of them.
Well, yeah, don't be a meanie. But for sure, no. I think it's a great idea.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for calling in, Kim. 314-436-7900. We welcome in Marie. Good morning, Marie. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have the width of my backyard at the property line an extensive berm planted with oak leaf hydrangea, knockout roses, Wine and Rose Wigelia and a couple of Norway spruce. They were established maybe 6 or 7 years, and I decided, you know, it would be a great idea to do a soil test and just be sure everything is, you know, is right. They were all flourishing. The soil test came back that I needed sulfur added, which I followed the instructions for that. And the next season, as everything should be pushing out and blooming, nothing really did. The oak leaf hydrangeas had no growth whatsoever, no flowers, a couple, 3, 4 leaves on these massive bushes. The roses maybe had green shoots 4 or 5 inches off of the ground. Wine and Rose Wigelia, really thin, spotty. Clearly, something wasn't going right. When I did put the sulfur in the soil, because this was an established plant area, it's not like I could dig and go really, really deep and turn down a foot or two to work this in, but I really worked hard to rake it in well, probably several inches for certain under the ground. So last year I just let everything set, hoping maybe something would happen, but it's obvious now the plants are simply dead. What did I do wrong? I followed the instructions in terms of the application of the sulfur, and what do I do about it now?
So the plants, just so I want to be clear, the plants are dead. They died. They aren't just poor performing. They've like totally died.
The oak leaf for sure is completely dead, and these were plants that the season before would have maybe 100 blooms on each of the three. And like I said, the roses just a few inches off of the ground. They normally would get 5 feet tall. I just feel like it's all they're dead and or just really not happy.
Do you have regular watering? Do you have an irrigation system? Are you hand watering?
I do have irrigation, but I am a hand waterer, and they would never have undergone any stress. The rest of my yard has a number of berms and plantings of all different kinds, and I got the gardening disease from my parents. I inherited it legally. I don't know, I could say I have a great green thumb, but I feel like I know what I'm doing, and I've had great luck for many years with all of my gardens.
And the rest of the berms, everything else seems to be doing well. It's just that single berm that you're having issues with?
Correct. And it's the only one that was recommended to have sulfur added.
Interesting. Okay. And one more question. Is this berm in full sun or does it have shade or what's
full
the
sun? Light?
Full sun. Okay. So all of the plants that you mentioned are full sun plants. So that would be kind of like my first thought is, you know, are they planted in the right place? When you talk about a lack of bloom or a lack of vigor, a lot of times that can happen from not getting enough sunlight. The other thing I think about is the crazy kind of weather patterns that we've had over the last couple of seasons with our ups and our downs and our times of drought followed by, you know, 7 or 8 inches of rain, you know, and then all of this fluctuation has really had a big impact on our gardens, and that could be a potential thing. But when you say you are regularly watering and you have an irrigation system and you're hand watering, it doesn't sound like that is an issue for you. I like that you got a soil test. And my question about that is, did you specify what kinds of plants were in that bed, or you just said it was an ornamental flower bed?
No, they ask for what kinds of plants are there. And so, yes, I did provide that.
Okay. So I don't think it's what killed your plants, the sulfur adding, but those plants I'm hearing, like roses, oak leaf hydrangea, I forget what else you said. Oh, the Wigelia. Don't necessarily need a lot of sulfur. We do that a lot for our boxwoods and sometimes azaleas and things like that. But those plants in particular, I don't think need a lot of sulfur to perform well. So the addition of that sulfur, I don't think probably hurt or helped. And it sounds like you mixed it in well enough. Like you don't necessarily have to dig a giant hole and really work that in 12 inches. The top few inches of the soil is just fine. So I don't know what to tell you. That soil test is a great option. So I think that maybe finding just some different plants. Are those the plants in your other berms, what types of plants are those? Are they the similar type of plant or something else?
I do have some hydrangeas, a different kind, and some of the other berms. I do have a wine and rose Weigelia, and actually several of the spilled wine varieties that thrive in my other berms. But then there are other, you know, perennial flowers and cone flowers and various things also worked in the other berms.
Well, I would try maybe repeating some things that are doing well in other areas of your yard. I like the soil test. I think that just consistent watering and, you know, making sure it sounds like you're doing the right thing. But sometimes plants die and we have to try again. So, I wish you good luck.
Thank you. I was just surprised every variety failed at the same time.
Yeah, that's interesting, but the soil test didn't find anything. So that's where I would lean.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the call, Marie. The number is 314-436-7900. We do have some people already on the line, so if you have called in, we will get to your calls next. And if you haven't and you do have a question, feel free to dial in at 314-436-7900. Michelle Reeser-West here answering your questions. It's the Garden Hotline on KMOX. It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Good morning. Glad to have you in. Michelle Reeser-West is answering your questions. She's with Pointer Landscaping. 314-436-7900 is the hotline. And George, you are up next.
Good morning.
Morning.
Let's get back to the pruning show. I've got a inkberry that's been in the ground since the house was built, like 26, 27 years ago. It's real sparse looking. And I tried pruning it back a little bit last year. It really didn't do much. And I was wondering to see how aggressive I could get with it and see if it's going to respond or not, or if you just need to take it out and replace it.
So inkberries are one that can take a pretty hard cutback. This would be one that I wouldn't go quite as aggressively as some of the others. I would stick to the rule of thirds a little bit on this. You could probably go a little bit harder, maybe half, depending on how big it is. I'm thinking about, you know, you said that the plant was older. Sometimes these really old trees and shrubs, they do need some maintenance pruning and some hard cutbacks, but they also can struggle a little bit if you do too hard of a cutback, just because they're older and it takes them a little bit more. And they probably, with the thinner branches and the legginess, they don't have as many, you know, leaves to photosynthesize that energy that they need. So I think you could be aggressive, but like tentatively aggressive, you know. This could be one of those things where you do a hard cutback, but you're not as aggressive as you would be with like we were talking about that burning bush. And then you wait a little bit, let it flush out, and then you can give it another hard cutback. And this is kind of a similar thing. When you cut back this plant, you're going to ask it to make more. So giving it that hard cutback is hopefully going to make it flush out some new stems towards the bottom of the plant, which will help its overall success. So I think that's your first move, is just maybe start with a third.
Yeah, it's probably about 5-6 feet tall. It's pretty good size, but there's a lot of open space in it, especially in the, you know, around the lower part of it.
So I think again, just be cautious, but I think you can be okay with a 5-foot plant. You could take 2 or 3 feet off of it, I would think.
And the next pruning question is redfoot dogwood. I had 3 of them planted in a row around a bird feeder. The one in the middle died, and so I repotted a new one, a 5-gallon one, and so they're not going to match, and I'm not expecting them to match, but how far could I trim the other two back just to kind of level it off a little bit?
So the red twigs can be cut all the way back to the ground. In fact, it's recommended just for the brightness and vigorousness of that red wood. Over time, that dulls as they age. So you can at least every three, maybe five seasons, but probably every three seasons, I would fully cut those back all the way to the ground. And then you'll have brighter red stems. That'll also help that newer plant in the middle as it establishes and the crown of that plant gets bigger. You know, those will eventually become the same size if you do that kind of hard cut back. You can do it every year. I believe actually Mobot cuts theirs back every year to keep them small. So it's possible, but definitely. And if you're only going to do a third, or you're doing it every three seasons, those seasons in between, you should definitely thin out the older branches, the ones that are thicker, the ones that have dulled in color, anything that's crossing, diseased, damaged. Those should be removed every year if you're not going to cut them back hard.
Very good.
Yep.
Thanks a lot.
Happy pruning.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. There's always an organic theme for this show, and it seems like pruning is today's theme.
I like it.
Besides, this is the first day of the season that we've proclaimed it. Whatever season that is.
Yeah.
The season to put things in the ground, the season to what else?
I just think pruning. It's pruning, it's pruning, it's pruning right now, and a little bit of cleanup, but it's mostly pruning time for sure.
Okay, so we are going to continue with your questions after the top of the hour. We get some news, and we got a couple of ads to throw in there, and then we'll get back to your questions. So if you're already on the line, you can stay with us, or you can call back in. I know your name, so I'll put you at the top of the list. 314-436-7900. It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Baby, yes, it is the Garden Hotline on KMOX, and Valentine's Day is coming up, so obviously a love song to begin the second hour of the program. However, double entendre. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
Okay. That, the today's topic, pruning, that's Ed Sheeran.
Oh, no. Ooh. We got puns. It's getting real
We're
up in here.
We're having fun. Michelle Reeser-West is the guest today from Pointer Landscaping. I do not want Fred or Ann to wait any longer. We're going to start with Fred. You're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Michelle, I have two questions. Number one, we have some wonderful Linton rose in our front yard. It's about 7 or 8 years old, but it really looks dead after all that snow just piled on it. It's maroon and dead looking. What should I do about that?
So are they blooming yet? Have you seen any flowers coming up?
A few, yes.
So typically what we do with our hellebores is, you know, like they are quote unquote semi-evergreen for most areas. Like you said, we've had a lot of snow piled on top of those, so they're a little worse for the wear. They're looking a little rough in some areas. So what you can do is just go out with your pruners and cut back any of the brown leaves. They will push out some new growth. It's typically what we do later in the season. We don't usually mess with our hellebores till they're done blooming, and we almost never cut them all the way back to the ground because they are semi-evergreen. So most of the time we're just going out there and cleaning up that winter damaged leaf. So you can do that now for sure. It would help aesthetically. You don't have to. If you're listening and you have hellebores and you're like, I'm not ready to get out there yet, it's not going to hurt anything to have those brown leaves. It's just an aesthetic thing. But you certainly could go out there and clean those up.
Okay. Then I can prune them later.
Yep.
When it gets warmer.
Yep. That's correct.
Okay. Then my second question, we had an egress window put in our home, and the lawn in the back is just all torn up from a tractor and so forth. They put new seating down, the company did, and I put some straw down. I know that's not going to cover everything. What should I do with that? Should I start planting? Or not planting, but seeding when it gets warm?
Yeah, you're probably going to want to. They put seed down now, and it's obviously not going to germinate when it's this cold, but the seed will kind of stick around. And once the temperature gets in the range where that seed will germinate, it will do some germination. You may have less than you would in the fall, just because it's hanging around longer. It could, you know, just get saturated by water. It could be eaten by birds. There's all kinds of things that could happen to that seed between now and the time that the temperature's here for germination. The other thing is that overseeding in the spring isn't always as effective as overseeding in the fall, just because that fresh grass doesn't get established before the heat of the summer gets here. So the earlier in the spring that you get down that seed, the more likely or the higher the chances that that grass will be successful getting through the summer. And then you also need to make sure you're getting it enough water. And again, right now we have plenty of water. So if you had fresh seed down and we had the temperatures right, you wouldn't really need to be doing any watering right now. So just make sure that you're not letting that fresh new grass in the springtime dry out so that it can get its roots established before the heat of the summer. But I would say as soon as we get to temperatures where the grass seed is germinating, I would go ahead and throw down some more seed. It's just, it's not going to hurt anything, and it's certainly going to help get those patchy areas established a little quicker. And then you're probably going to want to do it again in the fall.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for waiting.
Yes, thanks for waiting, Fred. And Ann has been waiting patiently, too. And you are up next with Michelle. Good morning, Ann.
Oh, good morning. I have two questions for Michelle also. And Michelle, I love it when you're on.
Thank you.
I worked in a nursery for a long time, too, and I should know the answers to these questions, but I want to understand what you would say. First of all, I did the winter hardy pansies in multiple pots and one up at church, too, and they look just so sad right now. Is it even beneficial to cut them back, or should I just trash them?
Oh, no, I think you could cut them back. If, as long as there's something that's still there, some green at all, like if it hasn't completely died back, those pansies, it's one of the great things about planting pansies in the fall that they, most of the time they'll bounce back in the spring, even if they're looking a little bit rough right now. So yeah, definitely get out there, clean up any of the brown leaves, leave as much of that like basal foliage, that lower, hopefully greener foliage at the base. And as okay. The spring temperatures start to increase and we get, you know, some stretches where we don't have as much frost or freeze, then those should hopefully bounce back for you. And you could throw down a little bit of fertilizer to help them out once we get, you know, a little bit further into the season.
Yeah, they're kind of white looking now or, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
But, okay. And the second question is do you use a particular fertilizer for all the hydrangeas, or and what would you use? I have multiple types in my yard, so I just wondered what you would suggest.
So I don't use a particular kind of fertilizer for hydrangeas, and honestly, I don't always fertilize my hydrangeas. I always recommend doing a soil test because you may not need that extra fertilization. If your plants are strong and vigorous, they're probably getting what they need. If they don't seem strong and vigorous, they have thinner foliage, smaller leaves, fewer blooms, you could try some fertilization in the late winter, early spring, and then potentially again in the fall. But with our flowering shrubs, we don't typically need to fertilize them as often as we do some of our other things. So if they seem healthy, if they're doing a good job and putting on a good show, I would just leave them be. When I do fertilize things, you don't typically need a big amount of fertilization that like some of them are like 12, 12, 12 or things like that. So there is, there are some organic products that I like to use for just basic fertilization. Plant Tone is one of them. They get that at a lot of the big box stores, and it's an organic product that's really good for flowering shrubs.
Right. Well, the product in that line for hydrangeas has gone up to like, the last few years, I think 27 for a little bag. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm asking this. Okay.
Yeah, all the fertilizers and all of that stuff is just enormously expensive, and it's just jumping up. It's one of the issues that we're having with our ongoing maintenance clients and having to raise our prices a little bit, because all of those types of fertilizers and things are just astronomically skyrocketing in price, much like a lot of other things. But again, that's why I recommend not using if you don't need to. So a soil test is about $25. You can take a couple cups up to the University of Missouri Extension office. That's, I believe they just moved to Overland last year. You have to look it up, but you can take them a sample, and again, $25, and they will send you a report back to let you know if any fertilization is needed.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, and good to hear you.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks for waiting, Ann, and thanks for your good questions there. 314-436-7900. It is the Garden Hotline. Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping is here answering your questions.
Looks like a cold, cold winter. Plenty of ice and snow. But
we've had some.
Keep the love light.
There may be some coming early next week, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be heavy accumulations. This is the Garden Hotline. And we have declared today's episode, episode one of the season, whatever that means. Michelle Reeser-West is our guest from Pointer Landscaping. My shy friend has texted me, and she is asking the difference or relationship between narcissus and daffodils, the fragrance of some of these plants, and when's the best time to plant them.
I just want to say to your shy friend, I'm kind of over this. I think you need to call in and talk to me. Personally, the text. I'm done with the text. I like this question. It's an interesting one. So Narcissus is the genus of this flowering group. So all daffodils are Narcissus. Not all Narcissus are daffodils. That was a mouthful for me to say. I actually practiced it over the break. So when you think about a lot of these daffodils that are blooming, there's just hundreds and hundreds of kinds out there that are coming up. Some come up early, some come up later. You can look outside right now and you can start to see some of their little green leaves are poking out of the ground. I've seen some a couple inches out of the ground already. The question about fragrance is an interesting one. A lot of plants within their genus have varying smells. Like, look at roses. Some roses you can buy and they don't have a lot of fragrance at all. And some roses are specifically really, really great smelling roses. And there's different smells of roses. So it's the same thing with narcissus and daffodils. Some varieties smell really, really pungent or fragrant. There's a variety of narcissus called paper white. Those are a lot of times, almost always grown inside. People put those in pots. And then they can force those to bloom inside. It happens a lot around Christmas. You see those around Christmas. We could do it right now if you wanted. But those are known to be really, really, really fragrant. A lot of people grow those just for that little pop of white color in the winter and a nice fragrance. I can't stand the smell of paper whites, so I don't grow them. It's
paper
really
whites.
Paper whites. Yeah, like white paper, paper whites. But they're a fun one to grow now or before Christmas because you can plant those inside and they'll bloom in a small pot in your house. So I hope that answers your shy friend's question. If she was on the phone, I could have a follow-up, but I can't do that.
Next time.
Yeah.
Next time. All right, let's get back to the phones. 314-436-7900. Don, who I believe is listening on the Odyssey app from South Carolina. Is that right?
That's right.
All right.
Yes.
What you got?
I have two questions. One, Lantana is very popular here in this part of the South, and we have it all over our front yard and our backyard, and it's beautiful in the spring, summer, and fall, and then it dies off. And we always wonder before spring on just how much we should cut it back. It always grows back, but there's been times where we've almost left it alone and it still flourishes. And there's been time where we practically prune it all the way to the ground and it still flourishes. But what's the best practice?
I like this question too. So lantana is super, super popular here as well, but it for us is an annual. So we don't have to prune it in the St. Louis area. We have to basically just remove it at the end of the year. Lantana is, you know, in its natural state, it's more of a woody shrub or sub-shrub, you might call it. So when we have that type of a plant, sub-shrub or something like that, we have to be a little bit more careful about where we cut it back to or how hard we cut it back. I think another example of this is lavender. If you cut it back too far, if you cut it beyond its growth, its growing point, it probably won't flush back out. So what I would recommend when you're pruning this is to kind of do this scratch test and take your pruners or something sharp or, you know, even your thumbnail might help. And you want to just kind of scratch back and find where the top part that has died back is brown and keep scratching back until you find the green. And that should be the area that you're pruning to. You can also you can also look for buds that are growing. And as long as there's buds and you don't cut off all of the buds, then it should produce fresh growth for you when the temperatures increase.
My other question is a little off topic. It's more about houseplants than it is gardening. Mm-hmm. But my wife and I, for a wedding present, we were given a corn plant. And we were married in 1980. So this plant is now 44 years old. And it's still going strong. And we've reproduced it many, many times. That it's we've lived in houses with tall ceilings. And it grows and grows, and when it gets near the ceiling, my wife will chop off maybe 3 to 4 or 5 feet of it and then put it in water to grow roots and then replant it. And she's got a very green thumb. She's been able to do this over and over and over again, and all of our kids have offsprings of this plant and stuff. But is that unusual for a plant to, 44 years old and still going strong?
Yes. I am so blown away and impressed by your wife keeping this plant alive for 44 years. My birthday's tomorrow. Happy birthday to me, but I will be 44 years old tomorrow.
Oh, really?
And I am as old as your wife's plant. And I have barely kept myself alive for all of this time. And the fact that she has kept this corn plant alive for my entire existence is the most impressive thing I think I will hear all month. So thank you for sharing that story. It's totally made my day. But yes, it is just in all seriousness, it's more impressive and more uncommon just because I think most people wouldn't put that kind of effort and work into keeping a houseplant alive for that long. So that's why. I mean, it's not, I think, uncommon for a plant to live that long. Probably a corn plant, it's a little bit uncommon because it's you know, like it's in a pot. But the whole thing is just super impressive and not very common. And just please tell her how impressed I am. And thank you for sharing this story on the eve of my 44th birthday. I'm not going to stop thinking about this.
That's great.
We were living in Milwaukee when we got married, and we moved to the South a year later, and this plant went on the moving van. We moved in December, and this plant, we thought it was gone already because it froze on the moving van, but it's amazing how resilient it was, and it came back strong. And then we once moved from South Carolina to Alabama, 5 hours away, and I put it in the flat on the bed of my pickup truck and drove it on an interstate highway, and it that plant, poor thing, probably thought it was in a hurricane by the time we finally arrived at our new house. And it practically died. Most of the leaves turned brown and the like, but from the bottom of the plant, it stayed alive, and eventually we pruned the brown parts. It's like we probably couldn't kill it if we wanted to.
Yeah, it's really impressive. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Great story there. And happy birthday.
Yeah, thanks.
That is amazing. Exactly the same age as this corn plant.
It's so cool.
It is cool to you. I can see it on your face. You're not going to forget this.
No, I really am not. It's so impressive. I've barely kept myself alive for 44 years, and I certainly haven't kept a houseplant alive for probably more than a year or two, but it's pretty cool.
The moments that happen on the Garden Hotline, they're priceless. There you go, priceless. All right, it is Garden Hotline on KMOX.
Through the window, by the window, that's where I'll become tiptoe, through the tulips.
You never know what's going to happen on the Garden Hotline. Tiny Tim might show up.
There has been some interesting songs played on today's show.
That's true. Michelle Reeser-West is the guest this morning from Pointer Landscaping. She is taking your phone calls, and the number to dial in. Time is growing short on this episode. 314-436-7900. Up next, Robin, you are on. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling about a maple tree. I think it's a crimson maple. It gets red leaves in the spring and the fall. And it's planted in an area where the previous owner had put down rock all around it. And as the rock has settled and weeds grow in it, I have used an herbicide to kill the weeds. The last 2 years, I've noticed branches dying on the maple, and I think it may be because of the herbicide. Since maples have such surface roots, I didn't know if you thought that would be the problem and if there's anything I can do to remedy the situation.
So I'm going to ask you if you know what kind of herbicide you use. So there are types of herbicides that are taken up by the roots of plants, and most commonly things like Roundup are a foliar herbicide, so it has to be taken in by the leaves in order to affect the plant. Do you know which type you had?
I've used Roundup in the past, but most recently it was Spectracide.
Okay. So most likely, one more question. Is this a established tree, an older tree, or like a younger? Okay. So
yes, we've lived here about 20 years, and it was here when we moved in.
So I really highly doubt that it has anything to do with the herbicide that you used, especially with an established tree. You'd have to put like a ton on there. You would have had to probably really, really, really drench that soil in order for it to have much of an effect. And again, Roundup is a foliar spray, so it's taken in by the leaves of the plants, not the roots. So I think you should be fine with the herbicide. But your tree is still struggling. So what I would recommend is to call an arborist. A lot of them will come out and take a look at your tree, and they could probably diagnose it. If it's something that's treatable, they can likely treat anything and then help, you know, the overall health of that tree, help from whatever's going on progressing. You know, maples can get an anthracnose, which is like a fungal issue. And those kinds of issues should be removed. You should remove any diseased branches from your tree. And I would really recommend an arborist. Like, I know there's a lot of tree guys around there, but arborists are, you know, trained and educated to things, the pest and disease aspects of the tree. So it's really important that you call somebody that knows about plant healthcare. Because if it needs to be treated or something needs to be removed, then they can do that. Most of the time, the average tree guy that's going around does a great job, and there's no offense to them, but most of them are for removals and pruning only, and they aren't as good at diagnosing. So if this tree is high value to you, which it seems like, you know, most big shade trees are high value to people in their yards and the shade and structure that it brings to your space, I would really consider getting an arborist out and getting that taken care of.
Okay. Thanks for your advice.
Yep.
Thank you for the call, Robin. Up next, we go to Sarah. Good morning, Sarah. You're on with Michelle.
Good morning. Happy birthday. And I have some questions about when to prune boxwood and holly.
So thank you for the happy birthday wishes. Boxwood and holly is an easy one for me. We typically say for those types of shrubs, Pax Day to Labor Day. In between that window is always a good time for pruning hollies and boxwood. So when you think about those and what those dates are, that's the frost dates or around the average frost dates for our area. Labor Day is September 1st, so it's typically a little bit early for our area. I don't even remember when our first frost was last year. I think it was late September, even early October. I think it took forever for us to get our first frost. So we're just looking in between that frost window. So you can prune now on boxwoods and holly. You can do some dormant pruning on them. We do a little bit of dormant pruning on boxwoods and hollies to try to open things up. We're doing depth pruning, we call it, where we're going into the boxwood and we're opening up any areas that may be really thick from years of shearing and just trying to help let some light in. So if you're doing that type of pruning on a boxwood right now, it could be done. Because there's no active growth. So one of the things that we look for or that we want to avoid, and especially in pruning boxwoods and holly, is that winter damage. So if we're near where there's fluctuation in temperatures where it can frost and then get really warm and then frost again, when we prune a plant, we're asking it to make more. So if we are pruning a boxwood or a holly and there's that fluctuation and we have a warm spell and that plant, because we pruned it, is flushing out some new growth, it doesn't always have time to harden off. So when that frost comes, that new growth will die back. And it opens your plants up to pests and disease issues, but it's also kind of ugly to look at. So you can actually drive around town right now. I've been looking, as we've been previewing our maintenance clients, and I've been looking around quite a bit about and seeing a lot of winter damage from our boxwoods from last year because it stayed warm so long and the boxwoods kept growing and people wanted to keep pruning. So we did see a lot of winter damage this winter. But again, just that was a lot of talking. So again, to kind of re-say, if you're doing some dormant pruning now, it's okay. But if you're starting shearing and things like that, wait until after the first frost, which is typically mid-April.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sarah. Appreciate the call this morning. Up next, we go to Luella. You are on the Garden Hotline.
Thank you. I have a beginning creek on the side of my driveway that goes by one native elm and then another beautiful white apple tree. This started out with mole tunnels, and then the 8-inch rain came, and now it's getting to be quite a large gully. We have tried putting compost in, and compost and sand, and the gully keeps washing out again. Across the yard, we cut down two large trees, so there's a lot of chips and soil mixed in. Can we use that to fill up the gully? What can we do so that it doesn't reoccur?
So we're seeing more and more of these types of problems in our St. Louis region because we're having these really interesting rain events that aren't so typical here, especially when we get, you know, these 6 or 7 inch rains all in, you know, a short period of time. So the water is going to go where the water wants to go, and it sounds like it wants to go down the side of your driveway. So once this has happened, it's kind of hard to mitigate that with just soil or mulch or sand alone. So one of the things that you can do is make like a dry creek, or use some kind of natural stone or some larger gravel, and kind of make just a natural dry creek that goes down the edge of your driveway. And you're basically telling that water where you want it to go. And then you won't have that continued washout. If you're looking to just have, you know, to put soil or dirt back in there, you need something to help stabilize that so that it doesn't wash away when we get these big rain events. And if you're putting just soil or mulch, there's nothing to keep it in place. So, you know, you could put some sod or something like that, but typically our turf grass doesn't have a really deep root, so that fresh soil underneath could still wash out in a heavy rain event. I mean, you could get lucky and we don't have a big rain event, and that soil or that sod can get established, and you might not have that problem. Or you can put some of that soil or mulch down and try to plant something there, because plant roots will help with the erosion. But the top of the plants also help to slow down the water, which also helps with erosion. So anytime we can slow down water, either by plants, roots, or the gravel, that helps with the water runoff. So if you're looking for something natural, I don't think your answer is soil or mulch. I would go with either like a rock, a dry creek, or something like that. I think that's your best bet.
Good question, Luella. Thank you for calling in. We're going to continue. Last segment, last chance, coming up next on the Garden Hotline with Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, let's continue with the phone calls on the Garden Hotline. Linda, you are up next. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a question. I failed to get my tulip bulbs in last fall, and I was wondering if I could possibly get them in anytime this month. Is there any way they might bloom?
They might. I don't think there's, at this point in the season, that you would have like 100% guaranteed for blooming, but I, you know, for me, it's always kind of worth the risk. If you don't plant them, they probably won't be viable for you next season anyway, like storing them over the summer and having them planted next fall. You probably have less of a chance to see those bloom than you would if you do it now. So if you plant them now, and we tip in, and you know, the groundhog told us we had 5 more weeks of winter, and that's true, and we still have, you know, plenty of cold left, you might get a bloom out of them. So for me, it would be worth the effort and the risk of just throwing them out there to see. The other thing you could do that might be less work is to put them into a container, into a pot. Then you could just put some potting soil out there, and hopefully they would, you know, they would just bloom for you in that. That would be less work, since you're not sure if you're going to get much of a show at this point.
Yes. They have been stored in the garage in a cool place, and some of them have sprouts on them. How deep do I need to plant them?
6 inches. I would start with 6 inches. It depends on what, I mean, some tulips like to be deeper, but 6 inches is a good average number for tulips. So if they're still looking good and they're sending out those sprouts, I definitely would stick them in the ground or in a pot.
All right. Thank you for the call. Let's go next to Tim. You are on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, good morning. Enjoy listening to your show, Michelle, on a dreary morning. Not really having a question here. I just wanted to wish you a happy birthday. You share a birthday with my son.
Oh, and great.
It's easy to remember his age because he was born in 2000.
Oh, so that's super easy.
He's just 25. I just wanted to share that with you and wish you a happy birthday as well.
That's really nice of you. Thank you so much, and happy birthday to your son.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Tim. That was nice. Let's go next to David. David, you're on the Garden Hotline with Michelle.
Yes, I've got several Allegheny viburnums, and then also Burke Woody, I think it is, Burke Woody viburnums. These are probably 10 to 15 years old. They're well established. And so hand pruning each one of these is like going to be a huge job. I want to reduce their size a little bit, maybe rejuvenate them somewhat. Is it acceptable to use like power hedge trimmers? I've got an extended pole power hedge trimmer tool that I have used, especially on the Burke Woodies, because there's so many stems in those, as opposed to the Alleghenies. They're more leggy, I guess you'd call it. So I was just wondering if that's an acceptable way to prune these back, using the hedge trimmer tool.
So the horticulturist, the snobby horticulturist in me wants to say, don't use your shears. But in reality, the shears are probably the way to go. Once these things get to a certain size, it's really hard for the average person to do hand pruning. So what I would say is go ahead and use that power tool on it. And then once you have it shaped and where you want it, then get your hand tools out and go back. And if there's any jagged cuts or things that just don't quite look right from getting pruned with that power shear, then you can go back and touch those up if needed. But if your shears are nice and sharp, you shouldn't have too many of those types of jagged cuts. One of the reasons why we don't typically recommend those power shears is that you're not getting a selective cut. So when you make that cut, typically in pruning, we want you to get as close to that that next bud or that next node as possible, so that you're not leaving like a really long stem that might die back and open your plants up to pest and disease. That being said, I think, you know, from what you're talking about, using that extended hedging shear is completely appropriate. And just, you know, making sure you go back through and doing any of those hand cuts will definitely help. But yeah, sounds like that's what you need to do.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, good luck.
Good luck, David, and thanks for calling in to the Garden Hotline, which I am thinking about changing the name of after several phrases have hit me throughout this program.
Oh, let's
Are you
hear
ready
this.
For this?
Yeah.
You've said a couple of them, and then one of the listeners said another one. So, sentimental gardener.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good.
That's good.
What does that mean to you?
I mean, you know, gardening to me is so personal. It's personal in a way that I've shared gardening with my family in some way, shape, or form. My grandparents, my aunts, my mother. So there's that part of gardening that is just really important and sentimental to me because I, you know, I take that with me and those feelings with me. But the other part of gardening for me is more about like the mental health of it, you know, like being out in nature and using my hands, and it's meditative, it's artistic, it just makes me feel good, you know. So I am most certainly a sentimental gardener. So that could definitely be the name of my podcast or my blog.
That's right.
Or when I'm here, we'll just rename it.
Yeah, no, I'll just say. And now our guest is the sentimental gardener.
Yeah.
Okay, snobby horticulturalist.
That's also me. These are really, you're nailing it. You don't know me.
So anyway, I've written these down. And then the other one was, I don't think this is going to fly. I don't think our producers will like this one, but gardening disease. One of the listeners said she had the gardening disease.
She did. I remember that. Yeah, she totally said she had the gardening disease. I'd never heard somebody say that before. But, you know, we always joke around when we're out, you know, if you had a landscape company, what would you, you know, what would you name it? And, you know, we normally come up with some punny things like Garden of Whedon or something like that, you know.
Right.
But I like these. These are really great names. I'm totally putting them on my list. So if I ever own my own one, I think I like the snobby horticulturist.
Yeah, that's a great.
But I am also very much a sentimental gardener, so that fits.
All right, Michelle Reeser-West, actually from Pointer Landscaping for now. Thanks, as always. Everyone seems to enjoy having you on, including me. Thanks, and happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
All right, that is it for today's edition of the Garden Hotline. Thanks to our producer, Drew Young. I'm Scott Jagow. Happy gardening.